Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
We have long wanted to take a look at red flag laws. These are those laws that allow anyone, with the consent of a court, to get guns removed for at least a year from owners who pose a risk to themselves or others. After the school shooting massacre in Parkland, Florida in February, 8 states passed new red flag laws, bringing the total that have them to 13. They're also called ERPOs, for Emergency Risk Protection Order. Supporters say there should be laws enacted like them across the country because they dramatically reduce the number of suicides in states that have them, for one thing. But we had a hard time finding a family member who's used a red flag law. Police, that's another matter. Sergeant Eric Piskonski heads the Seattle Police Department Crisis Response Team. He's been using red flag laws, or ERPOs, since the Washington legislature approved them in 2016. He finds them an important tool. Sergeant, how many times have you used them?
We have used the ERPOs up till this point since the law went active. We have done 36 that we've petitioned for.
Wow. So talk us through, first of all, how does it work? Does a family call you and express fear, or do you see someone? How have they worked?
Generally, the incidents come to our attention via a 911 call. Whether it was, you know, an individual that might have been experiencing some suicidal ideation or concerns about behavior, possible threats, and specifically that there is a firearm involved.
And I'm sure some of them you rush through a little faster than others if you think something's imminent.
Yeah, of course. There are a couple of different ways to do it. It does have the caveat of what's called an ex parte court order, which is an emergency court order, an injunction, if you will, that we go to a court and say, hey, we think this is an immediate likelihood here. We think there's some very serious concerns about this individual's behavior associated with and around a firearm. And so we would go to a court anytime during court hours and be able to petition that immediately. And then we would do our best to get that served immediately after the order's issued.
Well, I can hear people saying, you mean you couldn't always do that if you were thinking that because of 911 calls, somebody was unhinged and shouldn't have guns? But you've explained to us that police have always been empowered to take guns away once someone was charged with a crime, like an intent to kill someone. But ERPOs, this is before someone's charged.
Correct. The ERPOs are a great tool for us to have now. But there were some other avenues. If they were convicted for a crime that was a violent felony that involved a firearm, that would have been a domestic violence situation, incidents like that, upon conviction, it's very common for people to lose their firearms eligibility.
Well, and so if somebody was saying on the streets, I'm done, I'm going to kill myself, you could not go to the court with that and ask to have their guns taken away, as you can now under the ERPO. You could maybe have gotten somebody committed, but you couldn't do what you can do now.
Correct. Yeah, we had quite a few instances where we would have an individual that expressed clear suicidality, had a firearm involved. You know, officers showed up, dynamic situation, stabilized it, was able to send that individual up to the hospital and request a mental health evaluation, certainly secure that firearm under community caretaking laws, and hold on to it. But prior to the ERPOs coming into effect, if that individual stayed in the hospital for, say, a couple, 3 days, maybe a day, and then the following week called us up and said, I'd like my firearm back, legally we had no standing to deny that return of a firearm.
And now it's in most of the states a year. Look,
correct.
Yeah, the idea is preventative policing. Advocates say that 42% of mass shooters show warning signs before committing their crimes, so there's the hope that these red flags will be preventative. But as you well know, officer, critics like the National Rifle Association say this is taking away someone's gun before they improperly use it. It violates their Second Amendment right to have one. What do you say?
I think that we're very careful in balancing the due process aspect of this entire ERPO process. So if we as law enforcement, or as a family member, but if we as law enforcement felt that this was applicable and we petitioned for this ERPO and it was served on someone, they have a court date that's 2 weeks later. And they have the opportunity to go before the judge and explain the situation, discuss what happened, what didn't, make their case to why an ERPO should not be granted. And then ultimately the judge gets to decide if that's the case. Mm. We have had a few that we petitioned for. It was granted. And 2 weeks later at the court hearing, the court chose not to grant a full order. And that's exactly how the due process should work.
Because the judge said, no, I don't feel it warrants taking their weapons away. But give me a case where it did.
Oh, we've had several. One specifically that we had was an individual that was exhibiting very concerning behavior, making threats to individuals, to a couple of different churches, to individual members at the church, some pastors that were there, and posting stuff on social media, making some very direct threats about shooting them up. This came on the heels of the church shooting that was down in Texas.
Yeah, but I can hear people saying, though, really, you know, that sounds like if you've threatened to shoot somebody, that sounds like there must be a law against that. But if we're applying what you've already told us, you're saying that only after they were charged with a crime could you have had their guns taken away?
Yeah, historically, that was always the case. Again, the due process. Mm. Just because someone is accused of or even charged with a particular crime, the due process has to kick in and they get to have their day in court. And so it would only follow convictions in specific court cases where firearms eligibility was then lost.
Right. As you said, there are critics. But what have you heard from family members?
We've had a lot of positive support from the families, especially those individuals where they're experiencing some acute crisis and there's suicidality presenting. Many of those are generated as 911 calls by the family or loved ones. Those cases, we have had a really good support from family members, to include multiple occasions where we've had thank yous directly in court or at the time, explaining to family members, hey, we have this new tool at our disposal. We would like to pursue it. And I've had a lot of support from the family for those reasons.
The example that you gave us, you know, may have prevented an attack on a church. Do you think you've also prevented suicides?
Well, it's hard to have the crystal ball and predict exactly what an outcome might have been. I think everyone in our unit believes that we have definitely prevented some suicides.
And one last question. We're talking about how you're using it. How do you see it work when families are using it? How's it working then when they're not even going through you maybe, but going directly to a court?
There have only been a handful of families in Washington that have pursued these directly. We have not had any specifically related to our unit. On two occasions, we tried to coach the family to go through it and petition for it. And ultimately, the feedback that we've gotten from a handful of families related to this is they're in a very delicate situation. They have a loved one who is experiencing some mental health crisis or some acute mental health issues. They're engaging in suicidal behavior or dangerous behavior, and they have firearms. And so it's created a very tenuous family dynamic within those units. And the feedback that we've gotten thus far from those family members is they didn't want to have their name on the paperwork.
Exactly. I was just thinking that this offers them the opportunity to say, it's not me, it's this police officer.
Correct. Yeah. And we're okay with that in the big picture. We're okay with playing the heavy, if you will, in that situation so that they can have that family structure in place. Because at the end of the day, that's going to be the most important part of their healing process. We're not looking to remove someone's Second Amendment rights forever. We're just advocating that, hey, during this particular time period, it's probably the best idea to remove firearms from the equation. You're going to need some help. You're going to need some assistance. You're going to need to get to a better place. And your family and your internal structure is going to be the best avenue for that. So we're okay with leaving that intact and having us be the ones that petition for it.
Yeah. That's Sergeant Eric Piskonski. He heads up the Seattle Police Crisis Response Team. They have used these red flag laws, ERPO laws, quite a few times, obviously in favor of them. Sergeant Piskonski, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Robin. Appreciate it.